Like,
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Mod State Podcast. We finally made it. Aside from my clear technical challenges that I, so we were all set to go and I have the Skype up. Obviously that's how we are recording this. And I,
well then who the hell's in the next room?
Who is? I was supposed to hit the record button on the, like the Ecamm program on how we record this audio and the video. And I hit the stop the call button. So I went 3, 2, 1, and welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. And it just went,
asshole. They say that God don't never give you no more than what you know you can't handle.
Hold on one second. This, I changed. God damn it. We're going to get
just
this.
Just stick with it.
Hold on. No, okay.
May as well roll at this point.
It's not recording. Because I changed a setting on here because I'm a dickhead. And
This isn't that video cast, Nate.
What's that?
This isn't that video cast.
It's not that video cast?
For dickheads?
No, oh, video. Yeah. Dick. Okay. Normal medium. All right, let's just stop. I apologize.
You good?
I just want it to be right. I don't want to snip it to this.
Let's eat some weed.
Sounds about right now.
Jesus.
Okay, god damn it. Alright.
That'll right. Have to do this robo trip in one day. I haven't decided.
Okay, let's see. Where's the EK?
It'll be a great podcast.
Robo tripping for a podcast.
Have you ever done that?
Back in like late high school, I think, or something like that.
See, I did it in college. The way to do it was with just DXM, you know, not all that acetaminophen and the kills your liver. Man, you're talking about blasted.
I don't know. I'm probably so good on that.
Oh, it's a good experience, man, but you got to do, like anything like that, you got to do it in the right environment.
Yeah, I can imagine. All right, so now my Ecamm.
Let me just say that strolling down Bourbon and Frenchman on a head full of the good sunshine was a different sort of experience. It wasn't bad.
I believe it.
Like, I thought it was going to be bad. I kept telling my cousin, I was like, Ryan, I'm a paranoid person. This is not a good idea. He was like, JD, just trust me. Yeah. And it panned out. Like, I ended up in this bar, like, no telling how long I've been zoned out, just staring at this black man, just playing the shit out of some James Brown and Prince. Like, they did a medley of The Big Payback and Kiss. Like the song. So you just have to be there for it. But it was like, and, you know, he's like, are you okay? I was like, yeah, why? And he said, dude, I've been talking to these chicks for like 45 minutes. I was like, I've been watching this band for 45 minutes. Yeah. It was all right.
All right. Okay, ready? Here we go. We got it this time. I promise. Sarah's like, oh my God, everything is just not working right technologically. Okay, 3, 2,
it's gonna
1.
End this.
No. All right, 3, 2, 1.
I okay. Still say she's going to end it.
No one's ending anything. If anything, I'm ending my ability to work with technology and computers for the rest of the day. Not only did I not hit the right record button, I didn't hit a record button. All I did was hit the end the Skype conversation button. And now my recording tools aren't recording. There's lag times, but we're here. And it seems to be going okay, so...
Yeah, then you let Sarah in the room.
She's been here, so she's not the variable.
How dare you!
In fact, she was here before we even started doing this, so it's not her fault, so, okay.
Honestly, I
know.
I don't know what to do with you anymore.
Okay, well, we are back. It is the 121st... It's the 121st... 121st episode.
It's the 120th, actually.
It's the 120th episode. Oh,
Jesus.
My God. Okay.
We're not doing this over.
We're not doing this over. We're gonna drive on. Okay. So to follow
Thank
up.
Thank you, Sarah.
To follow up here, this is the Mod State podcast, ladies and gentlemen. If you like what you hear, please go to modstate.com for more op-ed and opinion pieces. And you're on YouTube watching this if you see our faces. And if you don't, you're listening somewhere. So continue to do so. With that, let's dive into... Now, this isn't really a New Zealand question. It actually is more of a... it's more of a comment about what people should expect or know about New Zealand. So in a way, this is... We're now being sponsored by New Zealand, so we'll just throw some shout-outs to New Zealand. We are not sponsored by New Zealand. However, this is some things our listener from New Zealand wanted the world to know, and I think specifically the not so much what the world should know, but I think specifically what people in the people that she was calling, I don't want to say calling out either, because that's not the right word, she was addressing with this letter. And
the heartland.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good way to
take somebody from Missouri, as they say, and then drop them
into
New Zealand.
Yes. So here's the couple things that she would like to discuss or bring up. The first is, she said, there are things that visitors to New Zealand would be perplexed by. So she said, here's the first couple. She said, we were the first, and I believe she means one of the first westernized countries to legalize gay marriage. The second thing is, she said, prostitution is legal. The drinking age is 18. And then she follows up with those three things by saying, interestingly enough, the world did not stop when the first three points were implemented into law. Meaning there was no apocalypse, and the country continues to drive along just as they have. Some other things of note in the country of New Zealand. They do have a fairly high youth suicide rate, primarily from the indigenous youth population. They also have a fairly divided, inequitable society between the Caucasian white population and the indigenous population and the Maori population there. They have one of the lowest unemployment rates in the developed world over the last 10 years, lower tax rates than many other westernized countries, including the U.S. Some other things she puts in there. We welcome immigration as we need them and value diversity. They have higher property prices and everything is very expensive, but there's plenty to do there. So this is just something she says of note. So if that sounds like a place for you, then just head on over to newzealand.gov and you can, no, I'm just kidding. So
just quick question.
Yes.
What is their guesstimated population?
That's a very good question. I believe when I was
You don't there, know that.
No, it's I think it's 4 million. It's
as big a fan as you are of New Zealand.
Well, I've got family there. So I think we'll just look. Wow, look at this. Population 4.793 million people.
So it's basically Atlanta, Georgia.
Yep. Yeah, that's fair enough. Divided into two islands,
North Orlando, Florida.
So I'm going to make some concessions here immediately. We did talk about the first
question.
We talked about the first three things. The first she mentions is legalization of gay marriage. The second is legal prostitution, and then the drinking age. Again, not that we have to take any one of these as a this is the point or this is the take home. I think what she's saying is these are things that in America, so we were kind of talking about the Christian conservative population in the last couple podcasts, where if you were to introduce, as we did introduce gay marriage several years ago, that it was as if the end of the world would happen, that this was the coming of Sodom and Gomorrah, the heavens would rain hellfire down on the world and we'd be burned up. And what she's saying is we've been doing this stuff for a fairly long time and we still function as a society. In fact, as she noted, as we said in the last podcast, the religious communities have a fair bit of collective responsibility that they don't see in the United States. So the question is, what gives? I mean, they're...
WTF, Mike.
Exactly. So...
I remember that video.
Yeah. So
one of the first ever viral videos.
You're right, actually. That was the
End of the World, I think it was called.
Yeah, it was the kangaroo or someone that was...
Something. The French needed to take a nap. The English were just ready to go. Just, all right, righto. They're just ready to march into war.
Discussing geopolitics.
Geopolitics?
Like geopolitics, not geopolitics.
I was just say, you lead them out of this.
So, again, the issue here isn't that it's any one of these things. The issue is that, listen...
The macro picture
is that...
Getting flopped into the middle of New Zealand, you might think you're on another planet.
However, you're in a country that, you know, doesn't have a lot of... I mean... They're not a lot of people. So I will make some... Before we move on, I'll make some concessions here. When we talk about platforms like universal healthcare, which New Zealand does have a universal healthcare, but they also have a privatized system that you can buy into, so it's not just all in one. There's some options. I do concede that places and other westernized countries do have smaller populations which allow it to manipulate and maneuver these type of social programs in a way that would be very different from 300 million people. I'm right there. I agree. However, that does not concede that we should not do anything or stick with the status quo where someone who has an 8-inch laceration on their arm would need to pay $35,000.
I didn't know where that was going.
There was a Reddit.
There was an unfortunate pause there.
No, there was a Reddit post of a guy that put his medical bill up on the mildly interesting sub that literally was he had an 8-inch laceration from putting his arm inadvertently through a window when he fell, and it was literally a 8-inch cut, $35,000 medical bill. So, again, there's something wrong with that. To me, it's just that hurts my brain a little bit. What's that?
Which part?
The medical bill, essentially. Ah. So what I mean is that I concede that it's obviously these programs may be easier to navigate with less people. However, even with less people, that you would then look at this sort of the equation going, okay, if the hospital bill is still going to be $35,000 in New Zealand and in the United States, if it's still the same hospital bill, then you would think that the 4 million person population would be paying more into that system than 300 million people in the United States. If you do the math, something's wrong somewhere. Right. And I don't want to get caught up on healthcare as the primary topic for this podcast. However, these are the barriers that we run into in the United States when we look at these certain things like universal healthcare. Well, it's not going to work here because of X, Y, and Z. Or for whatever reason, legalizing prostitution and giving the rights to sex workers is somehow going to bring on the coming of our Lord, Savior, and Jesus Christ.
Prostitution is not legal in America.
Prostitution is not legal in America.
So how did Kim Kardashian get famous? Well, a sex tape with Ray J.
Yeah, a sex tape with Ray J. However, was there a transaction between Ray J and Kim Kardashian?
You think that woman does anything for free?
Well, probably didn't pay Ray J.
I'm going the other way around here, okay?
Or rather, Ray J did not pay her.
Pull back a little bit.
Okay. Legalized prostitution in the sense that it is literally regulated.
The state recognizes that this is an overall gain for our people to legalize this, and I'm sorry, you lost me there.
Okay.
Okay.
So
the state's first responsibility, its first tenet, is by the people and for the people, and there's no way to argue that as a positive gain. That's me.
You want me to do it? Because I can try.
Let's leave that one for third.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
Let's go back to numerical order here.
Okay.
First of all, I get it. You got a smaller population, the medical bill. You also would have more people paying into the system. I don't want to get mathematic here. That's not the point of the podcast, but you'd have more people paying in. So I'm not really sure, aside from insurance companies versus the central government, that the overall number would be different. Because, yeah, you'd have medical bills for more people or less people, but you also have more people paying into the system or less people. So the math isn't as clear as you want it to be there.
You're right. And I do recognize that, but again.
Let's get to the drinking age. This is the really easiest one.
Sounds good.
The best one. If you're old enough to get drafted, and now women have the right to get blown in half for their country too, Equality? You got it. You're old enough to be blown in half for America. You're old enough to drink, in my opinion, also to buy and smoke pot. But I agree there.
I'm there with you. In fact, I turned 18 the first time I went to New Zealand. I was 18 years old.
Well, you could have drank in New Orleans, but...
Yeah, so... actually, to be honest with you, bars just made 21 and up. Like, that was just their way around it. And right. You could buy beer, you could buy booze, but...
Now, gay marriage, I'm going to harken back to what knocked Rudy Giuliani out of the nomination process in 08 when he said, and he was talking specifically to the Republican Party, but I'll say it in general here, we need to stay out of the bedroom of two consenting adults.
Yes.
Okay, that's my personal opinion. I'll say it again as far as... You want to get into the good book? You want to dig in the Holy Bible? Well, by all means, dig up for me the page where the marriage rites, R-I-T-E-S, are contained. They're not there. Marriage is an institution of the state for taxation and census-taking purposes, et al. That's two out of three. Now let's revisit your precious, while on one hand, I'm for non-objectification of women. Now, there are male prostitutes, gigolos, whatever you want to call them, but yeah. Let's revisit that, because I'd love to hear that argued as a net gain for society.
Okay, so we're talking about a net gain for society when it comes to legalized prostitution. Okay, so there's a couple net gains here. The first is, I don't know, how do I prioritize these? So let me just throw a couple out there.
How do you?
Okay, the first would be nonviolent offenses going into the prison system. So really let me start with the first one. So by taking it out of the black market, by allowing the female or the male in this case to have the right to be a sex worker, to sell their services, the sexual services to someone, allows that to come out of the shadows. The way a lot of these countries do this is these individuals have to have quarterly checkups, so they have to make sure that they're clean. They have to go through the preventative medicine process, so they're essentially screened.
Has a red light district, don't they?
What's that?
Holland or the Netherlands, whichever you prefer, they have like a red light district in Amsterdam, right?
Yeah, they have a red light district in Amsterdam.
In that district in which people have this idea that Amsterdam is like New Orleans. They have the same misconception about both, that it's this out of control hellhole. No, actually not.
Amsterdam. Amsterdam is beautiful. It's an awesome city. It's not like that. It's not just. It really is more of a business than it is a just on the streets. I'm sure that happens. And I'm not saying that it alleviates these issues. However,
lotion is a business.
It's relative, right? So the next thing.
You're okay with this.
I am for a number of reasons. And not because I'm looking to be able to pay someone legally for sex services. That's not the point. What I say
I'm
is that.
I'm going to email your daughter the link to this podcast.
Listen, I think that by having the power to make the decision so that it comes out of the light, so that you are less worried about the legal ramifications, you have access to healthcare, it's legal so that you don't have to go through illegal loops to do it. I just think it's sort of like dealing drugs, right? Think about this for a second.
We're dealing with human beings here. And nobody's talking about denying anyone emergency care.
I'm just saying it when you can take something that is a nonviolent offense, right? So
I see that point.
Nonviolent drug crimes, they're having sex for two consenting adults exchanging money.
I don't think they should go to prison.
Yeah, two consenting adults exchanging money for sex. It's an act. It's a thing
I think they should be fined.
We're literally putting these type of people in jail and filling their beds.
I don't agree with that. I don't think we should be putting them in prison.
So this is what the illegalization, if you will, of prostitution and drugs for that matter does is we criminalize it and then we put these people into a system that becomes very difficult to get out of. So this is one reason why I think you should legalize it. Two is it's just safer all around. Because if you can have it, like a red light district like Amsterdam, or in that case, in New Zealand, it's not out there in a way that your kids are going to be shocked to see it. It's just that it isn't the back I was going to say backdoor CD action, but that's not the right thing to say about prostitution.
It
literally is more in the light.
It makes you feel better to say that we recognize this is legal. Look, I don't think that male or female prostitutes ought to be put in prison. I don't think the people that procure their services should be. I'll argue, first of all, that's a net loss fiscally for society. We've got a $20 trillion national debt, okay?
I mean,
we're small government.
Okay,
I think they should have the daylights fined out of them, because I'm sorry, the state cannot stand up and say that this is what is best for our people.
So my thing is, I don't care really that much. I just say, if you were to say let's legalize it versus not legalize it, I say it really saves a lot of people from the potential of going to prison for something like that. Or getting stuck in a system.
People don't do a thing because it's illegal. I mean, how many people are like, hey, I'm a law-abiding citizen, I'm not going to do this. Do you not see at all that that's encouraging, engaging in that occupation, when we say to young girls and young boys, hey, this is legal, this is an honest profession?
I wouldn't say that a lot of these places say it's honest.
I'm talking about in this country.
Yeah, I don't want to say that it's people say it's not honest or it's not. It's just a job that a lot of people wouldn't do that job. I think you still have to make that decision. But some people get put in this decision. So human sex trafficking, for example, is a case where a lot of people wind up there and didn't ever think they would be there, but based on circumstances and the people that they've run into, they are. And I think
they land in Caligula.
And I really do think that by having a legal process, by doing this, you don't alleviate it. However, I think you can make it, if these individuals get in trouble for it, maybe there's legal routes or better resources in order to manage the situation that they're in. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of...
Well, we could just desensitize everybody in America to everything, everybody will feel great about their abysmal lives.
God forbid that we have a little sex education and sex empowerment in this country.
Where are we going with that?
No, we will just... It's
I'm not arguing against that.
I realize that, but anyway.
Oh, my God. All right, okay. Let's shift. You know what? I will argue this. This is a wonderful basis for another podcast. Like, have a not a policy debate. There's two different parliamentary debate. Have a values debate. I think that'd be a good idea.
A values debate. Now, that would be...
Well, there's two categories in debate, and whether it's high school policy or in college parliamentary, there's policy and values.
Yes, that would be an interesting one.
There's really no way for us to argue policy here, because, I mean, there's no way to measure. I mean, you could say, hey, these laws have been introduced.
Yeah.
And this has happened. There's no – how do you measure emotional harm? As much as lawyers try to do in this country with punitive damages – or not punitive. What's the other one? Anyway, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. It's
I can't think of the phrase. But as much as lawyers try and do that, no knock on them, you really can't measure – how much, for instance, you or I were stressed out by our experience in the military. Now, I know that's a leap compared to prostitution, but you see what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I do.
How do you measure that in a policy step to ease the suffering of service members? You really can't, because every man and woman's experience and joys and sorrows are unique to their person. So I don't really know how, without saying this is a values debate, we can argue prostitution being legal or not. It's not the same thing as smoking a joint.
I would have to do a little bit of research on it. I am merely being visceral to this sort of response. So let's.
You're mainly just being gracious to your friend and partner in crime here.
Maybe that's the case. Okay, so we do want to talk about just briefly the one Emmanuel Macron. And this is a little I don't want to say that we're late in the game on doing this, because that's not the case. I think that I've thought about this since he did this speech in front of Congress. It was Congress, right?
It was the U.S. House.
It was the House. However, it wasn't talked about a whole lot more after, just maybe for a day or so. But he definitely gave a speech that I think a lot of people thought was a lampooning or a, as you had said, a repudiation on the President of the United States. However, I think you see it a little differently, that it wasn't a straight up repudiation on the President of the United States, but it was more of a repudiation of an ideal.
Maybe it's just because of their relationship, which I think is equal parts bizarre to match the overall love, hate, well, hate's a little strong, but love, discontented, disgruntled rapport between America and France throughout the years. That's it, because there was no ad hominem launching into President Trump, scarcely mentioned him by name. And again, I'll repeat, any other world leader, from Angela Merkel to Miss May in England to Abe in Japan to, you know, anywhere. God knows, the Prime Minister of Australia. No other world leader could have gotten away with this and not been blasted on Twitter. I really think, because you see their genuine affection for one another in public, and obviously in private, they supposedly talk for 4 hours, and that's why the U.S. is still in Syria. Macron said that in public, and Trump didn't dispute it. Now, you know President Trump. The sky could be blue out here in South Louisiana right now. He's going to go, wrong. So if Macron was off base here, I'm not being disrespectful to the president. I'm just calling it how it is.
Yeah.
If he was off base here, you don't think on any of this, Trump would have gone wrong in 140 characters?
Okay, so I think, quite frankly, it's hard for me to not believe that a bit of what Macron was doing was a dig at the president. I think that
a dig, maybe, or cajoling or an exhortation.
I think it was a bit of calling out. I mean, that's what it was. Because here's the thing.
I don't think he was trying to insult him.
No, I don't think so. I think there's a couple things that he needed to do himself and Macron needed to do. And this is my objective observation. This is how I see him. I think that the broader political or world political community or geopolitical community doesn't look at him as like a very strong leader. Like, he has to contend with the people like Donald Trump, who isn't necessarily a great leader or some charismatic, amazing, great leader, unifier. He's just a character. He is you just can't miss him. So this is who Macron is having to sort of contend with and be a leader next to. He also has to deal with other, say, Eastern European countries, and for broader context, a lot of European countries who are dealing with nationalism and populism within their countries. So he's also seeing that in the United States. So this was his chance to step up in a very bold arena where he's got some allies and some not within the House, and give a blistering speech that says the way forward is not nationalism, it is not isolationism, and it's not running away from anything. It's coming together, and that's how I see it as a leader of France, and whoever's with me, join me, but I don't think this is the right way. You literally cannot remove Donald Trump from those statements, because that's what he's embodied. That is what the president has embodied. He has embodied nationalism. He has embodied populism. He has embodied isolationism to an extent.
Right. I mean, for one thing, I would say, whether they were on the phone 3 hours or 4 hours, Trump said it was 4 hours. I believe he said it was 4 hours. Macron didn't disagree. We're still in Syria.
Yes.
And Steve Bannon's gone, last I checked. Rudy Giuliani, a greater than small government Republican, is now heading up the legal team. I'm saying, look at the overall dynamic here.
And this was
And I rest my case with, the president has yet to try and push back against anything Emmanuel Macron said on his favorite medium, Twitter. Straight to the taxpayer, Twitter.
Yes. I
think it was cajoling him. I think it was certainly an exhortation of, hey, we need America in Syria, if nothing else. The world need. It was a smart speech.
It was. I will say that I think it was less of a dig than it was a challenge. I think it was a challenge.
I can meet you there. Yeah,
I think it was a challenge to not just Donald Trump, because if they talked for 4 hours, then they talked for 4 hours. And I'm sure that there's...
Yeah, nobody disagreed with them on either camp.
Yeah, I think there's a way greater depth, a deeper context to their conversations for 4 hours. I mean, there's just so much that you can capture in a 20-minute speech and 4 hours of conversation.
If you haven't, watch Emmanuel Macron's... I don't know if it's his acceptance speech or a... I don't know if they call it an inaugural address in French, but... Whatever it is, I think it's his victory speech. If you haven't watched that, it's worth 35 minutes of your life. Because if there's subtitles, it is one of the greatest speeches in the modern era.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to it.
It fills the room, let me tell you.
I do think that France is...
from perspective.
France is moving into some leadership roles that they didn't have before Donald Trump took office.
It started in Mali.
That would
be. We're still at Walter Reed at the end of our time there.
Yeah, so they did spend some time there. They're also
They were the only nation to go in there and clean house.
That is true. The next would be a leader in both, sort of. I don't want to say they became a leader in immigration because of their proximity, obviously, to North Africa, but they also had the climate change or environmental causes sort of fall in their lap,
right.
And the United States says F you and left the Paris Climate Agreement. So he
though, France is as strange a place as New Orleans as a city, okay, in that wearing a hijab in public is also illegal in many municipalities in France.
I am certainly not like just touting the fact that France has got it all figured out. That's not the case.
I've got that heritage, okay? Yeah. I've got as much reason as anybody to do that. Saying it's a confusing equal parts relationship to meet the America's a weird country. France has just been at it longer. They've got homes that are older than our country.
Yeah, they surely do. There are some nuances to that country that are interesting and worth exploring. However, I do think that his overall speech was more of a challenge to the people of America and to the president of the United States. And
I can meet you there.
Yeah. More importantly, I think to the House, to the Senate, to the lawmakers at the federal level, to say, listen, we need everyone to move forward. We can't exclude people because exclusion creates isolationism.
The fact that President Trump basically shamed Paul Ryan into inviting him, because you know the Speaker of the House has to invite someone to speak.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize that until.
You think Paul Ryan wanted to hear that speech? And don't think for a second he didn't submit that speech in advance.
He would have had to. I don't know, Paul.
Nobody speaks before the House and all of that. Well, regular people, it's a scripted event.
I mean, I don't think that Paul Ryan is pro-Trump by any sense of the mean.
I don't think he's pro-Emmanuel Macron.
No, I could probably – you're probably fair.
He didn't want to sit behind Macron and listen to that. You know, he went out and ate a box of Alka-Seltzer or something. I mean,
no one in the Conservative Party wanted to sit behind Macron as he gave
Captain
that speech.
Captain Trickle-Down enjoyed that speech?
Yeah, I know. I will tell you, as he was giving it and I was listening to it, I was – obviously I had some time to Monday morning quarterback it and really break it down. But at the time it was like, ooh, like, oh my God.
Yeah, Mike Pence is probably going, man, if I was president, I would have never invited this frog to speak.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I'm glad that we touched on that briefly. I think their relationship is interesting. I would like to see some sort of memoir
Of course he's Trump's best friend. Of course he is. I mean,
I would like to see some sort of memoir or historical context to this relationship later on down the road and see what. I mean, the thing is, at the end of the day, he's a successful businessman. I mean, they have that in common no matter what.
He's a center-left populist from France. I mean, if anything, you'd think Trump would go after Angela Merkel, except, you know, I mean, I don't know, or the Prime Minister of Japan, somebody. But
I don't know.
A center-left who – I mean, he's never been a politician.
No, I mean, I really truly believe that there's actually more commonalities between the two guys. I don't mean on some intellectual level or some philosophy level. I just mean they're both – I mean, Donald Trump was a rich young dude once. They've never been in politics. They've got a lot of business stuff in common. Who knows what they talked about for 4 hours?
They both clearly love beautiful women.
They do.
Macron's
older
translation.
Older beautiful women. They certainly are both into that.
And let's face it, the greatest commonality here is they like each other.
And they do. So I don't see Justin Trudeau and Donald Trump having the same relationship. However, I think for whatever reason, Macron and Trump can do it a little better.
Well,
so.
Macron, whether I'm right or wrong here, I don't think he's quite as full of himself as Trudeau.
Maybe. I don't know.
Trudeau's very proud of himself.
Yeah, I just don't know enough as much about him to be able to make that categorical claim.
Categorization.
I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, listen, we've got another podcast to do. We're at a half hour, so let's get after it. We're gonna have another one for you and get our beautiful faces on.
Take our pants off.
I gotta just put on a little eyeliner here and get this all.
You kid about that. One day when we have HD cameras, this is the way that all of them do it.
I know. I'm holding off right now. I'm gonna have to ask Sarah.
Mick Jagger does it when he goes on stage, but that's a different matter, I suppose.
That is indeed. So, all right, my friend. As always, until next time.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.